You know, we're in season two of Sermon on the Mount, and we're going to be in Matthew chapter 6. And, you know, it's Jesus' first recorded teaching. Some of you have heard me say all this stuff before. And it's Jesus' longest recorded teaching. One of the things Jesus is doing in the Sermon on the Mount is he's painting a picture of what he wants believers and this new movement and community that he's creating of followers of his, what he wants that to look like. And so he's trying to paint a picture in words, you know, that we would hear his words, and you know, we would get this picture in our mind of what am I supposed to be doing? What is our family supposed to be doing? What is our church supposed to be doing? What's this supposed to look like? Years ago, when we were getting ready and making plans to build this building, and we had actually just got started on this building, I went to visit a man in our church who was one of the original founders of the church. We call him Grandpa Taylor. Him and his wife helped build the first building, which is the building we just got done repairing. But he helped build that building, but was unable to help because of dementia, was unable to help on building of this building. Well, I went to see him one day, and in their house out on East Harbor Road, and I went in, and Grandpa's, you know, I said, "What have you been doing, Grandpa?" And he talked about doctor's appointments and so on, and he said, "What have you been doing?" I said, "Well, I've been building the church building." And he said, "What do you mean building the church building? It's all done." And I said, "Well, no, it's not done. It's barely started." And he said, "No, it's all done." And he reached over to the closet, to the little chest drawers, whatever it was, the nightstand next to him. And he opened the drawer and he pulled out a picture of our church building that looks like this. And he said, "See, it's all done." So in his mind, because the picture had been, we had an artist rendition, you know, painted of the building. So everybody kind of have an idea of what it was going to look like when we finished it. But in his mind, that it was all done because he saw the picture. In some ways, that's what Jesus has trying to do. He's trying to paint for us a picture of what it looks like for a group of people, a nation of people, a world of people who would follow after Jesus, what they would look like and how they would live. And so that's part of what the Sermon on the Mount is. It's a verbal, Jesus' verbal, you know, a narrative of trying to paint this picture of what the world looks like. So today and next week, we're going to look at what Jesus taught about money and about the things money can buy, the things money can purchase, the things money can help us accumulate. And so, and today, if we get to it, today, we probably won't. We'll just get to part of it today. I just looked at the clock. We're not going to get to it. But I have it in three chunks. Here's what he says. It's Matthew chapter 6, verses 19 through 21. It'll be up on your screen. He says this. He says, "Don't store up treasures here on earth, where moths eat them, rust destroy them, and where thieves break in and steal. Store your treasures in heaven, where moths and rust cannot destroy, and thieves do not break in and steal. And wherever your treasure is, there the desires of your heart will be also." Let me pray. Father, speak to our hearts today. I know we've already prayed that you would do what you want to do this morning, but again, I pray, help me and speak to our hearts. Amen. You know, Jesus gives in those verses, he gives us two directives. And it's interesting, one of them is a negative and one of them is a positive. And they're both in what's called the continuous tense. So when he says, "Don't store up in treasures in heaven," he's actually, this is how it could be said, and I'll try and help you understand this. It could be like, "Don't start and don't ever, and keep on not storing up treasures in heaven." So it's like it's a continuous thing in the negative. Don't do it, never do it, don't ever do it. Keep not doing it. You know, I mean, you could put all kinds of bad English phrases in there. But the idea is that you would never start accumulating treasures on earth, and you would not continue not storing up treasures on earth. And so that's what he gives is the negative. In the positive, it's a continuous, and the positive would be to continually store up treasures in heaven. Start, and then continually store up treasures in heaven. That's the idea of the two things in continuous. And, you know, he uses to illustrate the comparison between the two of the, you know, not storing up and storing up. He uses three things. He uses linens or clothing. He uses, you know, the idea of anything of cloth, anything of material. You know, it could be leather. It could be, you know, some sort of woven material. One of the things in Jesus' day, and especially because they lived in the Roman Empire, that everyone wanted but not a lot of people had, was a robe that was purple, you know, a toga that was purple in color. And to make that purple, divers would collect, divers and you know, fishermen, they would collect thousands and thousands of thousands of snails off the coast of what today is Lebanon. They would collect these. And then people would process them, and it would take about 1,000 snails, and they would boil those snails, and they would get the liquid that the snails excreted, they would collect it, and then when it contacted oxygen, it would turn into this rich purple color, is what it would turn into. And then they would use it to dye, you know, dye yarn, dye material, and it took 1,000 per of these snails to make 1 ounce of dye. 1,000 of them to make 1 ounce of dye. So it was very, very expensive, but everybody wanted them. I was thinking about, you know, like in our world today, you know, the idea of clothing and, you know, the stuff we're all wearing. And I tried to think of like what are the, you know, popular brands that would be like that level that everybody would want. And I could not even think of one name because my clothes cost, or this came from Amazon, Costco, my underwear are Costco, my socks are Costco. So I don't think he's talking about Costco kind of stuff here. But he's talking about like these brands, you know, like Prada or, I mean, I don't even know what they are. But that everybody would want to go, oh, that's a Gucci or that's a Prada. You know, like, I mean, nobody goes, oh, that's a Costco. Except for when I'm wearing a shirt and Rob walks in and he's wearing the same shirt. And I go, hey, Rob, we got the same shirt. Costco, huh, Rob? And because we do have some similar outfits. But now nobody goes, I want Costco. They want Prada, whatever those things happen to be. Jesus says the dilemma of getting those things and storing up those things in that day was the things that moth got into their, you know, their homes and would just eat them, you know. And then next thing you know, you got this linen with big holes in it, and it's not as valuable as it once was. So he says, don't store up that kind of stuff. You know, I mean, in our world, you know, we store up things, and it may not be moths, though there are moths that are around and eat clothes, but, you know, it's like the critters get in there. Next thing you know, they're making a, you know, that you got them stored in your garage in a box, and next thing you know, like, man, the garage is kind of this weird smell, and then you start digging around only to realize the mice have made a nest in your clothes. Everybody know what I'm talking about? That's what he's talking about. Or he says, or where they rust, things that rust, or that things that just corrode. He says, you know, don't store up things that corrode. And or thieves. Now, we have situations because we got alarms, we got safes, we got, you know, all kinds of things. We have a safe here at the church. I shouldn't be telling you this. We used to have a safe here at the church. We did used to have a safe here at the church, and at one point, somebody broke into the church and hauled the whole safe away. So it wasn't just the stuff in the safe or whatever. They hauled the whole safe away. Now, fortunately, there were only a few things in it that were worth any value, and part of them were my adopted boy's original adoption papers, which that's the thing that made me the maddest. But, you know, we can try and save stuff. You know, we can try and keep stuff safe, but we all know what? It's really not possible. And it was less possible in Jesus' day because homes were so easy to break into. And he says, you know, just don't go and spend your life storing up all that stuff because none of it lasts. None of it lasts. Or Solomon said it this way in Proverbs. He says, we all come to the end of our lives as naked and empty-handed as on the day we were born. We can't take our riches with us. I mean, we can't. He's trying to make the point. You know, don't spend your life storing up for those things. He says, instead, store up your treasures in heaven. And what you store up in heaven, he says, it can't be eaten like moths. It can't deteriorate or corrode. And it can't be stolen because there are no thieves in heaven. Revelation 21 says there will be no thieves in heaven. There will be no liars. There will be no immoral. And there will be no thieves in heaven. So it's safe there. He says, that's what you're to store up, and that's where you're to put your storing. And Jesus' brother, James, emphasizes the same kind of idea in his letter to the church that was struggling. And it was struggling. Part of the struggle that was going on was between the rich and the poor in that church, in that group of believers. Here's what he says. He says, look here, you rich people, weep and groan with anguish because of all the terrible troubles ahead of you. Your wealth is rotting away. That's that whole idea that Jesus was talking about. Your fine clothes are moth-eaten rags. Your gold and silver have corroded. The very wealth you were counting on will eat away your flesh like fire. This corroded treasure you have hoarded will testify against you on the day of judgment. And then he says, for listen, hear the cries of the field workers whom you have cheated of their pay. The cries of those who harvest your fields have reached the ears of the Lord of heaven's army. That's an interesting line. It's the only place in the New Testament where it's used. The Lord of the heaven's armies. That's an Old Testament idea, but that's what James says. The cries of them. He says, you've spent your years on earth in luxury, satisfying every desire. You have fattened yourselves for the day of slaughter. You have condemned and killed innocent people who do not resist you. Maybe James had heard Jesus teach about this whole idea of storing up treasure in heaven. Maybe he had heard one of the parables Jesus told about this idea, because Jesus told a number of parables about this. Maybe James heard Jesus one time, even though he wasn't a follower of Jesus until after Jesus died upon the cross. Maybe one of the times he was following his brother to figure out what is going on with this guy. Maybe he heard Jesus at that point teaching. Because he told about the hidden treasure, the unmerciful servant, the parable of talents, the rich young ruler, and vineyard workers. She said, I mean, all kinds of places he talked about this idea of storing up riches on earth versus storing up riches in heaven. So, if we're supposed to store up treasures in heaven, what does that look like? You know, you can't go on PayPal or, you know, whatever it happens to be and send off some money to heaven. You know, it's like, how do you do that? Let me give you some of the things that Jesus specifically talked about. And I'm not going to give you all, if you want the note, want the verses, you know, contact me, send you my notes. But giving to the poor. One of the ways we store up in heaven is giving to the poor. And it's throughout the scriptures. So Matthew 19, Mark 10, Luke 12, Luke 18. There's, you know, just all kinds of passages about that. One of the ways we store treasure in heaven is by giving to the poor. And however that looks, you know, in your life, the homeless, you know, shelter, the good cheer, whatever it happens to be, to help people that are less fortunate than you and that have less than you. Another way, and we've gone through them in season one, was all of the things in the first verses, the first part of the sermon, that all had to do with relationships. You store up treasure in heaven, and Jesus, over and over, this is one of the points Jesus was making. You store up treasure in heaven when you're doing your relationships right. So he talked about in the Beatitudes, blessed are the poor in spirit, blessed are those who are merciful, all those things. He talked about being salt and light. He talked about good works. He talked about anger. He talked about adultery. He talked about divorce. He talked about revenge. He talked about loving your enemies, and he talked about forgiveness. And we're storing up treasure in heaven when we're doing relationships right. Then we're storing up treasure in heaven. Another one that you could put in there is prayer and fasting. When we're praying and we're praying rightly, we're praying with the right attitude for the right reason. We're praying as the scriptures teach there. We're storing up treasure in heaven through prayer. Another way, and Revelation actually talks about our prayers are like incense that are put in a bowl that are gathered with all of the other people that pray, and that somehow those all that incense goes up to God. I don't know. It's just a picture that's painted by John, but it's like not only is it my prayer, but it's all of our prayer when it all gets added together. It's like incense just going up before the Father. Another one is if storing up things on earth has to do with storing up things that can be eaten, can be, you know, corrode, and can be stolen, then storing up treasure in heaven would be the opposite of that, of not spending our life on those things. And it's so easy to get sucked into that. It's so easy to get sucked into that. I mean, we all talk about the American dream. And it's just so easy to get sucked into that. You know, something new comes out, something faster comes out, something bigger comes out, you know, something, whatever it happens to be, and we just get sucked into it. And are y'all with me? I mean, we do. We just get sucked into it, this whole idea. And here's one of the pictures that Jesus talked about, this whole idea about gathering things. And it's found in Luke chapter 12. Let me read it to you. It goes like this. It says, then someone called from the crowd, "Teacher, please tell my brother to divide our father's estate with me." The world has not changed. Things have not gotten any different whatsoever. You know, I was with someone just recently who passed away, and I was talking to her daughter before her daughter flew away, and she's so frustrated because she's in the middle of this conflict with her sister, and as soon as mom died, the sister called and wanted to know where her share of the money was. Wasn't like, how you doing? You were there taking care of mom, whatever it happens to be. It was just about, where's my share? Where's my part of it? The world has not changed. This was 2,000 years ago, and it's still the same today. I mean, I could tell you a story. One of the guys who was part of our church was dying. He wanted to die at home. His wife could not continue to take care of him. It was a second marriage because of death. And his wife could not care for him home, so she sent him to the hospital, took him to the hospital. And while he was dying in the hospital, the stepkids came to the house and started taking all the things that belonged to them in their mind. The world has not changed. It just has not changed. And he says, friend, who made me the judge over you to decide such things as that? I mean, who made me the judge to determine whether you get that much and you get that much and whatever that happens to be? And he says, beware, guard against every kind of greed. Life is not measured by how much you own. And he goes on, he says, a rich man had a fertile farm that produced fine crops. He said to himself, what should I do? I don't have room for all my crops. Then he said, I know, I'll tear down my barns and build bigger ones. Then I'll have room enough to store all my wheat and other goods. And I'll sit back and say to myself, my friend, now you have enough stored up away for years to come. Now take it easy and eat and drink and be merry. That's interesting. He's like, gosh, I got so much grain, I don't have anywhere to put it. It was more grain than he had the year before, or maybe 2 or 3 years before. It's like, what am I going to do with all this grain? And Jesus is trying to make the point. The guy had no thought that maybe I could share some of this grain. You know, maybe I could sell some of this grain. Maybe I could give this grain to someone who needed it. Instead, it's like, I got all this grain. What am I going to do? I know. I'll build bigger barns. I'll build 3 more grain bins. Because then I can just store it all up and I'll have enough for me. Everybody with me? Not enough for everybody else, but I have enough. I'll have enough for me. You know, and then I can eat and drink and be merry. But God said to him, you fool, you will die this very night. Then who will get everything you've worked for? And then he says, yes, a person is a fool to store up earthly wealth, but not have a rich relationship with God. So one of the ways we store up treasure in heaven is by having a rich relationship with God. And he's poking the bear of the religious leaders who were some of the wealthiest there were in the community, in any community. The religious leaders were some of the wealthiest. And he was poking the bear because they were wealthy in possessions and stuff they had, but they were not wealthy when it came to a relationship with God. They had the outward form. They had all the outward stuff, but they didn't have it going on in here. That's what was missing. And so he said, yes, a person is a fool to store up earthly wealth, but not have a rich relationship with God. So your treasure, the treasure in heaven, is partially, it's about being rich in this relationship with God. Which means you spend time with him, you pray, you worship, and so on. Let's talk, I'm going to take 5 more minutes, and let's talk about these funny verses that are found in the middle of, between this and the part, we'll pick it up next week. But here's what he says. So go ahead, yeah. Your eye is like a lamp that produces light for your body. When your eye is healthy, your whole body is filled with light. But when your eye is unhealthy, your whole body is filled with darkness. And if the light you think you have is actually darkness, how deep that darkness is. And Jesus uses this, I mean, it's like, what? Does anybody else have like, what's he talking about here? Because it is this kind of a weird thing, and it's right in between this passage we just looked about, a storing treasure in heaven versus treasure on earth. And the next passage is where it says, where he says, nobody can serve two masters. They'll either serve one and hate the other, or they'll be devoted to one and, you know, despise the other. That's the next verse that he goes to. So, but right in the middle is this whole idea of, you know, having light in your eyes and darkness. And if you see and you're healthy, or you don't and you're not healthy, it's like, what is he talking about? Well, I don't think it's an obscure verse that's stuck in there out of nowhere. I think it's the connecting verse between the ideas that he's trying to get at and the ideas we'll look at next week. It goes like this. See, when your eye is healthy, your whole body, it says, is filled with light. You know, if you've been around somebody who has macular degeneration, somebody who's losing their, you know, their eyesight, and however that happens to be, you know, and they just, you know, their vision just starts going like this, and the next thing you know, everything's dark, and they just see maybe a little bit of light out here. We had a couple ladies in this last year that have passed away, older ladies that were living at Maple Ridge, and then one of them was at home and passed away, but both of them were basically blind. I mean, they could see like a little tiny bit out here, but that was it. And one of them, I said to her, I said, she was living in Maple Ridge. I said, how do you know what time of day it is? She said, the only way I know is if my TV's on. I mean, and I started thinking about that. Even driving away, I was thinking about how weird that would be to not know what time of day it is, because you have no idea of sunlight. You just have no comprehension of any of that whatsoever. And just, but he says, if your eyes are full of light, then your whole body, and you see these things. And, you know, I mean, and part of that whole reality is, you know, when you like these ladies, I mean, I could have gone in there wearing anything I wanted to wear. I could have gone in there, hair messed up, whatever it happens to be. One of them, I'll just tell you a little quick story here. I might not get any further than this story, but So one of the ladies that I visited for years was living in the nursing home, the Regency up in Oak Harbor, and she was mostly deaf, she was completely blind, and she had diabetes, and I would visit her regularly. She's in her early 90s, and you know, mentally having some dementia things, and so I'd go in, and in her early 90s with diabetes, you can imagine how warm her apartment was. Anybody want to imagine, you know, I mean, it's just so warm. And I'm sitting there and I'm trying to hold a conversation with her while I'm trying to keep my eyes open. You know, it's just like, oh, it's so warm in here. And I've heard this story 37,000 times. And I'm trying to like, oh. And then it hits me one day. It's like, I could fall asleep right now. And I could even snore. She wouldn't be able to see me fall asleep, and she wouldn't be able to hear me snoring. This is a bad situation. Now, hopefully nobody took offense at that, but that's my world, visiting, you know, people. But he says about this eye, you know, if your eye is light, then your whole body is going to be full of light. But if your sight is dark, you will be full of darkness. And if the darkness you have, you think it's light, life is darker than you think it really is. Here's what he's talking about as the connection between those two. Hopefully I can help you understand this. Here's the connection. He said, if your eyes are focused, because what you do with your wealth, what you do with the things you have and storing up treasure in heaven, is really not about wealth management. It's about focus. It's about where your focus is. It's about where your priorities are. It's about where, you know, because another verse we'll look at next week from Paul and Timothy. He says, you know what? God gives you these things to enjoy. If you have something nice, you're not supposed to like, oh, I can't have anything nice. I mean, that's the wrong side too. God gives you things to enjoy. But where's your focus? And so what he's saying is, if your focus is in the right place, then you're full of light. And your whole life is full of light. But on the other side, if your focus is on storing up treasures on this earth, if that's the thing that captivates your focus, if that's the thing that captivates everything about you, and you are taken hostage by the need to store up treasure on this earth, then he says, and what he's saying is, then you've got darkness. And your whole life is full, in essence, of darkness. And if you think somehow that you're not doing that, when that really is the focus and you're not doing that, then you're darker than you really imagine you are. Does that make sense? You're in further darkness than you imagined you ever were. That's what he's talking about there. So he's really, this whole idea, this connecting verse is really about the idea of where is my focus? Where is my priority? And I put it this way. If you think you are perceiving correctly and focusing what you should, but it's darkness, then things are darker than you think they are. See, this wrestle with storing up treasures on earth and treasures in heaven, the wrestle that goes between those two is really not about how much you have or how much you don't have or what you put in your store or what you don't store. It's about where your focus is. That's what it's about. Is my focus all on this over here, which is all going to be eaten up and it's going to corrode and it's going to be stolen? Or is my focus over here on the things that God would want me to have my focus on? And part of that is being rich in my relationship with God. Does that make sense? That's what that verse is talking about. And you could go home right now and you could look up and like, is Matt right? You will find 1,000 different interpretations of what that verse means because nobody knows exactly what it means. Because it's just such an obscure, like, what? Does it even belong there? Did somebody put it in there? But I think in reading, just reading it all in context, taking out the periods, the whole thing, I think that's what he's talking about. This is about focus. And if your focus is in the right place, you're full of light. And all of your life will be healthy and full of light. But if your focus is on the wrong thing, it's going to be dark. And if you think it's light, you're really in darker places than you think you are. Make sense? Okay, let's stand together. I got more. But I wrestled all afternoon yesterday. Do I add more? So I came in this morning and added more. I shouldn't have. Should have left it alone. Father, I think most of us are here, and most folks that are online and will be online, we're here because in some way we want to have our focus right. We want to have eyes that are full of light. We want to have eyes that are full of light and we see things right. Our focus is in the right place so that our whole life could be full of light and healthy. And so, Lord, we're asking you, I'm asking for myself and then for my family and then for our church, Lord, that you would continually help us to have our focus where our focus needs to be. Because if our focus is where our focus needs to be, then we will be full of light and we will be healthy. Top to bottom, inside out. So Lord, work on this area in our life. We want you to teach us. We want you to discipline us. We want you to grow us. We want you to transform us. And everybody said...